end up swing. Full end up swing. Full end up swing. Full end up swing sex show.
November 12th edition of the Linux Link Tech Show. As we get off to a rocky start here tonight, we're going to take a minute and play our usual promo. So if you're just signing on now to the show, join us on our IRC chat line at thelinuxlink.net. Join the channel Tech Show, and we'll be right back in just a minute.
Hi folks, this is Link from the Linux Link Tech Show. Have you ever thought to yourself, I have a question for these guys? Or, I wonder if they would review my product? Or, why don't they talk about this? Or maybe, I sure would like to support these fellas somehow? Or just, how do I get in touch with them? Well, the easy answer is to email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. You can let us know any questions, suggestions, or information you might have, and perhaps even get mentioned on the show. Email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net and let us know how we're doing and whether or not you enjoy the show. And also catch us on IRC every Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern by pointing your favorite IRC client to our server, thelinuxlink.net, and joining channel Pound Tech Show. Hope to see you there.
Hey, hey, Dan cutting in here. Do you have any questions, comments, complaints? Don't like what Alan said last time? Feel free to email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. Do you live in or around Bethlehem, Pennsylvania? Plan on being in the area some Wednesday night? If so, and you would like to join us in the studio, we would love to have you. Again, email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. Linux is a community project. Being a community project, it tends to foster regular gatherings of Linux enthusiasts who collectively call themselves Linux users groups. Chances are, there is a Linux users group in your area. We here at the Tech Show belong to the Lehigh Valley Linux users group, so if you hail from the area, come join us. Membership is free and fraught with fun. If you're new to Linux, then consider checking out our sister organization, the Linux Special Interest Group, run by LVLUG member Jeff Sartler. The Linux SIG caters to newbies and runs hands-on labs. If you are south of us, be sure to look up the Bucks County Linux Users Group or the Philadelphia Linux Users Group. Those to the east, there's the New Jersey Linux Users Group. More information can be found at thelinuxlink.net, which strives to be the unofficial portal of Linux and Linux happenings in the Lehigh Valley. If you find yourself in one of those rare locations that is not conveniently near any Linux users group, get your name and desires out there on the web. Contact the closest lugs, and chances are you will find neighbors who are looking to get together. All you need is a few enthusiastic people and a place to meet, be it a living room, basement, library, or local pub. You will meet new people, learn some stuff, and have boatloads of fun. So remember, support your local users groups. Finally, we here at the Linux Link Tech Show thank you for listening and hope you enjoy this episode as much as we enjoyed putting it together. Ooh, how about that promo? If it gets any longer, we won't have time to do a show. Good evening. My name's Dan Washko. Again, welcome. On this November 12th edition of the Linux Link Tech Show, I'm ecstatic, as always, to be here, giddy with excitement. and bloated with abdominal pain. Sitting across from me, as usual, is the Bashmaster himself, Lincoln Fezzedin.
Hey, hey!
And over by my workstation is the Mixmaster, the Tim McGraw of Linux, Alan
God, please,
Xbox
no.
Metzler.
Hello.
Oh, we have a jam-packed show tonight. Coming off the heels of the Lehigh Valley Linux Users Group meeting from last night, we'll continue our discussions about Linux desktop software and where it's made some inways into the desktop. And is it ready for prime time, Link?
Is it ready for prime time?
Yes.
I think so. I use it all the time.
All right. We'll be discussing that.
Definitely.
Well, I'll talk about my update to Panther on Friday. And Alan will discuss his Xbox exploits again. And, of course, listen for the second clue in our contest. Link, our contest? Explain it.
Our contest. We have a PC that we're going to give away, preloaded with Linux on it. Nice little system, which you will be able to find the specs on our website at some point in time. In fact, it's almost the exact same configuration that we're running our stream from, so, you know, it'll run just fine. Anyway, we're going to give this away to you all preloaded and ready to go, so you can play with Linux on a separate workstation if you are using a dual boot now, or perhaps as a gift for somebody, or just something to tinker around with, or whatnot. And we have given away one clue last week. We will give away one clue this week and another clue next week. And by combining these clues, you should be able to find a little bit of information that you can relay back to us through email. And the first person that does so will win the computer.
Awesome. Right, Alan?
Yes, indeed.
Alan would like to have one.
Everybody's just jumping with excitement here.
But we're not giving him one. We have, I think, four people joining us tonight. Mm-hmm. Three people on the chat. Excellent. We got some really, really, really fantastic news. Patrick Davila, his wife had their baby this evening.
Yeah.
Well, actually, it was born yesterday.
Yesterday, yeah. Congratulations.
Yep, their baby and mom are doing great. He had a son, Marcus Scott Davila. That's great. Congratulations, Patrick. And wife, what's his wife's name?
Mrs. Davila.
Congratulations, Patrick. All right. Davila. Another hopefully Linux-ready user.
Hope he stored up on all his sleeping.
Yes, indeed. I hope he has gotten some sleep because I understand this to be his first kid, right? I don't remember.
No,
I'm pretty sure it's his first. And I know after having one that, and Dan, of course, you know too, that once you have one child, you never sleep again. So, I do indeed hope that he caught up on his sleep first.
And on par with that news, in my email, young schoolgirls rapidly tweet, say below cause strange glory, perverted schoolgirls, angel broken drop, animals decorated. That's an email I'm going to have to check out later.
Animals drop decorated?
It says, say below cause strange glory, perverted schoolgirls, angel broken, dropped animals decorated. Welcome to the Net's hottest young girls site.
Sounds like a really bad attempt at a coup or something.
Yeah, well, I can't repeat anymore, but no.
It's probably a really bad attempt at English is what it is.
Don't confuse yourself. That is not the second clue. Not the second clue. It won't be that hard. Bad choice of words. It won't be that difficult. All right, we got to clean up the show here a little bit. Why don't I roll right into Panther since I'm already talking?
Okay.
Link, if you
want to talk about any news or anything first.
Do you have news?
I do have just a quick topic of discussion that I wanted to hit on with both of you guys. And that is...
And everybody on the chat, too.
Yeah, and everybody on the chat, too, exactly. And that is a DistroWatch for Linux. What is going on with the major Linux distros now? I mean, they're all...
Going bye-bye.
They're all going... Yeah, they're all going bye-bye. They're all dropping all over the place. We've got Red Hat, which isn't going to do a distro anymore. Instead, they turn it over to Fedora Core. Fedora, which has released their Core 1, which I see on Slash that people are saying is a mild disappointment. We have SUSE, which has recently been acquired by Novell, along with Xeemian. And although I expect to see something neat happen with that, I don't expect to see it anytime soon.
Well, they just released the Xeemian desktop, too.
Yeah, but now that they have SUSE, everything's going to change again, and they're going to have to regroup and figure out what they're doing. And then we have, I hope they tighten the distro up a little bit because it's absolutely huge now. You know?
You don't like that DVD install?
DVD. Next time it's going to be like 2 or 3 DVDs worth of stuff, you know?
Comes with his own hard drive.
Yeah, right. And then you have Mandrake, which I haven't heard anything about since did they file for bankruptcy?
Something like that.
I think they filed for bankruptcy a while back. I haven't heard a thing about them ever since then.
Didn't 9.1 burn up hard drives, or not hard drives, CD-ROMs? It was like it had some command in it. I don't remember exactly what the command was, but if you ran it on a CD-ROM drive, this was a CD-ROM drive that was made by LG, you could actually burn the thing out.
Cool. Maybe that's why we haven't heard anything about Mandrake for a while. What other big distros?
Debian.
Big name. Debian, you never hear anything about Debian except for them from the Debian people. I actually would like to try Debian, but I need some kind of tutelage going on there because it is not the most painless distribution to install. But what I'm trying to get at here is like the distributions that are still going are Debian and Gentoo and Slackware, which is going stronger than ever. And these are all kind of distributions that are not big corporate-backed distributions. And you notice that, like, all the big corporate-backed distributions are not there anymore. SUSE is there, but, you know, it just got bought out. And
Caldera.
Red Hat's done. Yeah, Caldera's gone.
What happened to Caldera?
Oh, it got encompassed by that evil company. What was that called again? SCO. Oh.
SCO.
Well, Mandrake 9.2 distribution was found to be incompatible with some LG CD-ROM drives, and it could cause an error message, make it unable to install, and then you find out your CD-ROM drive is dead.
Awesome. And you know how we get all this information, folks, right offhand for you? Because we are sitting here with internet-enabled laptops that we can hit Google with.
Google.
This is our preparedness for the show.
Well, there's still a lot of distributions based on the long-lasting major ones.
Yeah, but I'm just talking about like the big corporate-backed ones.
The big ones. Right. Corporate-backed.
They're all flunking out
as
of now. I mean, we'll see what happens with SUSE, but
there's still Turbo Linux in Japan.
And Turbo Linux was a very early sponsor of the Lehigh Valley Linux Users Group, although I have not heard hide nor hair from them for quite a considerable amount of time.
We got to move to Japan.
Yeah, we got to move to Japan.
They had an interesting booth.
Next tech show, live from Japan.
Yeah.
That would be fun.
And Magician at the Linux World Expo, was it 2 years ago? That Magician was there.
I don't
throwing money out and everything. And then
I would remember somebody throwing money out.
You don't remember that?
No, I don't remember.
He was like throwing dollar bills out or something.
I could have done that. Now we got people on the IRC chanting, Gentoo, Gentoo.
That's true, Gentoo.
Gentoo, I'm sure, is a cool distribution if you have a whole lot of time to play with getting it set up right. However, my philosophy on that is this. I can probably take Slackware, which has everything that I like on it already, and tighten it down and quicken it up a little bit in probably an eighth of the time it takes to compile the kernel on Gentoo. So I would like to, you know, In all fairness, I would like to try Gentoo sometime, but I want to try it on my Spark Station 20, which I'm sure is going to take me like a week just to get everything on there. But eventually.
Alan, aren't you trying to port Gentoo to the Xbox?
No, not quite.
Not yet.
I'm just trying to get it to run anything.
Gentoo.
What, trying to get Gentoo to run on anything?
No, get the get Linux to run on the Xbox. I'm just trying to get anything to run there.
Right.
Anything else? Any other news? Dan, Alan, Tony, yeah. Anybody?
Not really. If I think of something, we'll cut into Alan's Xbox session with it.
Not a problem.
Well, how about that Panther, man?
Panther. Well, if you read my blog link, Alan, don't want to leave
this
you
was
out.
This was the one post that you posted like the last 2 weeks, right? This blog entry that we're talking about?
this is my last post of the last two. No, I posted, I think, 2 posts to my blog. But Friday, I had the Rooter guy. Not Roto Rooter.
Mr. Rooter.
Mr. Rooter.
That's
Rooter.
What it is. Yeah. Mr. Rooter. I made the same mistake at work one day. Called the guy Roto Rooter, and he got all mad at me. We're Mr. Rooter.
Well, he was a nice enough guy. They came out because my sewer line was blocked up. So it gave me the opportunity to work from home and take care of a lot of graphic stuff I wanted to take care of. And then I went in later on that evening to work to finish up and on some of the stuff on the website at work. And since I had most of my work done, that I thought it would be good enough time, and I was brave enough to upgrade the Panther. My big concern with the Panther was that Illustrator would not work afterwards, and I didn't want to leave myself in a lurch for some of the work I had to complete. But I was confident at my stage of the game, and I took the plunge. The upgrade the Panther, I grabbed my software disks that I needed at work to possibly reinstall some of the applications if I needed to. Dreamweaver MX 2004 and Illustrator CDs. So I slapped Panther into my laptop at home that night and started with the installation. Now, I had talked to a person who went through the installation beforehand, and at her recommendation, I did an upgrade with an archiving feature, mm-hmm. which basically it replaces your existing system, but it keeps all your old files, application files and libraries and everything, and copies over your existing user accounts into the new Panther so that everything should be the way you want it to. The install itself was fairly long, probably on par with doing an XP or 2000 install.
But is it a manual kind of thing, or something you can start and walk away from? And
it's pretty much you answer a few questions, basically the license, where you want to install it, whether you want to do a custom type install or just go ahead and go hog wild with what they recommend, mm-hmm. which is where I chose the option to do the upgrade with archiving. And then you click the button and it installs itself. To give it some credit, Panther installed a little faster than Jaguar did when I reinstalled Jaguar so I could put Yellow Dog on. So the install took about 45 minutes, half an hour to 45 minutes for disk one. It rebooted once during that process, and then when I put disk two in, it didn't require a reboot after that. But in order for me to be able to get the X-Server and developmental tools, well, X-Server was on disk two, I'm sorry, and then it comes with the developmental tools, which I need to use for Fink and everything else, so I can get the open source software running properly. Mm-hmm. So all in all, it took about an hour to an hour and a half to install the entire upgrade the entire operating system. And it was a little flashy, of course. Looks nice. Looks really nice, actually. I fired it up. My biggest concern was that the GIMP was not going to run, because I really depend on the GIMP. And I clicked on the X server and fired up the GIMP, and it worked perfectly. OpenOffice worked, although I think OpenOffice in Apple's X server right now, it looks kind of jaggedy. It doesn't have that smooth crispness that it does on Linux or Windows even. And I'm thinking that's probably because it was developed under the Darwin X server and not Apple's X server. So maybe the next release of OpenOffice for Mac OS will resolve some of those issues. I look forward to that.
Was this last release for Mac OS, for Mac OS X, was actually the first OpenOffice release for Mac OS X?
I believe it was. And it's a version behind the...
Right, so it's just going to take them a little time to catch up with things, probably.
Yeah, but it works great. No complaints, really. It does what I needed to do. I looked at your presentation in it today, and it was fine.
Cool.
Next thing was Illustrator. I wanted to fire that up and see how bad off I was, and that ran perfectly. I was all excited. I was like, wow, I don't have to reinstall it. And then I went and I fired up Dreamweaver 2004. MX 2004, the latest version of Dreamweaver that's supposed to run with Panther, designed for Panther, and the damn thing wouldn't start up. I couldn't figure why. You see the little icon bounced, and then it stopped. I'm like, well, wait a minute, what's going on here? It bounced, and then it stopped. And the weird thing was, when I installed the Dreamweaver MX, it put it in its own MX 2004 folders, so it didn't touch my existing Dreamweaver MX, the older version. I could fire up the older version without a problem, which was really odd. And I was like, well, maybe I need to reinstall it. So I went and I reinstalled it. It still didn't work. I figured, well, maybe I need to remove it from the hard drive completely, wipe it out, and then reinstall it. But it doesn't have an uninstall feature. Now, if I could digress a minute here, and I was thinking about this. When you install Linux software or Apple software now, chances are you're not going to get an installer. If you install the Linux software by sources, you have to be careful. If you do an RPM or a package, you typically have an uninstaller. But I was kind of disappointed that Macromedia did not provide an uninstaller for their software. So I had to look up how to do a manual uninstall to remove the files and everything. Now, the only software or operating system that I would say has a consistent uninstall feature is Windows.
But except that doesn't it's consistently broken.
Yeah, it doesn't work for crap.
It never really works all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it uninstalls only part of it, and it leaves remnants leaving left all around.
Mm-hmm.
And what's infuriating is, and if you think about this, if I need to...
Half the time, all it does is remove the icon.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a lot of good that does, right?
Having a little bit of knowledge with Linux or with Apple's OS X or even BSD... If you install a piece of software, chances are you could remove it, because aside from maybe some libraries, which typically if it's a program that has its own libraries, the libraries have some name resembling those libraries.
Certainly.
And shared files usually are put in the shared folder underneath a directory with the application's name. So even though they're scattered around, typically in the USR or USR local directory, you could probably collect them in a short period of time.
Sure, you can do a find or a locate and match up file names and find just about whatever you're looking for.
And it was the same way with the Apple, with the OS X, that they don't scatter it all over a hard drive and make it so difficult to find. It's not a treasure hunt. I mean, you can they're in logical locations, and the files are named by the application's name, or the directories are named by the application's directory's name. So, they're easy to remove. Now, on Windows, on the other hand, they can name the damn thing anything, and it can end up being a file that's shared by another application, so it makes it really difficult to remove the software.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to go into the registry and hack that apart.
DLL hell.
That and the fact that it will not remove DLLs that are running, or any program that's running, Windows won't remove.
Oh, yeah, that's a pain in the butt.
And once you load them DLLs in there, they're running all the time, so.
And if you manually remove software from Windows by not using an uninstall feature, you risk rendering the machine unbootable or into an more unstable state.
Instead of starting Windows.
Yeah. So, that's my... segue
risk
into the
rendering your computer into a doorstop.
Yes, the render the doorstop. Anyway, back to the Dreamweaver 2003 issue. I went through Macromedia's uninstall or removal directions from the hard drive, and just as I was finished moving everything into the trash, I said to myself, what if there's a tit out there about this? And sure enough, there was. It was a relatively simple fix, which I had to move everything from the trash back into the proper locations. And Link, what it turned out to be, and here is another reason that proprietary software is a bugger, and you would never have think that this is the problem, but the new version of Macromedia and a lot of new software these days, the activation code that you get with it, you can't just use the activation code. You have to put in the activation code and then register it online before you can use it. So what was end up happening is, even though I registered it online, there was a glitch in the upgrade procedure for the archiving that it doesn't copy that information back over again that you actually registered it. So that's why it wasn't starting. So it kind of made it like an unregistered copy that the trial period had expired, so it wasn't going to run, and it wasn't going to give me a message. So I had to delete a file and then re-register it online, and everything was fine. But that was a pain in the butt. That was the biggest pain in the butt. I learned a couple days later that some of the web pages, I was doing some web testing on there, and I was copying them into the Apache documents directory on the workstation and viewing them from the workstation. They were gone. I was like, wow, what happened to them? Well, you got to realize that during the archiving procedure, that it copies your old stuff over and replaces it with completely new stuff. So it was in the archived area. I could just move it back over. But what was more infuriating was MySQL was gone. So I had to reinstall that. I don't know what the heck happened to that. And as I was driving home today thinking about those things that I had to fix, it dawned on me that probably Webmin is also butchered, and I'll have to reinstall that. So it was a fairly smooth upgrade, but I still have to reinstall some software. Most of the stuff appears to be working. It's faster booting now. Applications seem to run a little faster, although I think it's slower shutting down. It doesn't hang when it shuts down, but it's just a little slower. They have that new expose feature where they've hijacked the F8, 9, 10, and 11 keys for doing stuff like you press the one button and all your stuff on the desktop moves to the side so you can get to the desktop and moves all the windows out of the way and it moves it back. And personally, I don't like that. It's a pain in the butt if I'm typing something, I accidentally hit those keys, all of a sudden my windows just disappear. And I'm like, what the heck's going on? And when you're using a dual desktop display, that it actually, I don't mirror my desktop, so I have an extension. It actually ends up forcing a mirror on the desktop, shrinking the other desktop down to the size of my current desktop, and then showing the exact, you know, mirroring, and then all the stuff moves to the side. And it's like, damn it, what the heck? So then I don't know. I don't like Expose. I'm going to see if I can turn that off. I like the new Finder. The new Finder is beautiful. I like it. It works pretty well. So that was my upgrade to Panther. It was pretty smooth and overall. Some glitches with the software, but I like it. It was worth it. I'm happy. And I don't know, there's such a whole weird culture around Mac users.
Yeah, kind of like Debian users. There's a weird culture around them, too.
I went to a Classroom Connect conference yesterday. Basically what that is using technology in school districts and everything. And kind of the aura there was, Mac's the greatest thing since sliced bread, but we're living in a Windows-centric world, and Windows kind of sucks, but we have to suffer through it. So everything was running off of Windows.
So you know, they talk about how to suffer.
How to suffer. So it's kind of like you go in there, and they're running Windows to do their presentations. They're all PowerPoint-based presentations. They're showing you how to use web search engines and stuff and using the new search engines that are out there and how to find really neat PowerPoint presentations. Oh, it was oohing and on, but, you know, if it was damn Windows, Mac is the greatest thing in the world. But I was glad to see that there was, out of the 8 vendors that were there, one of them was a Linux-based company, Symbiote Technologies, based in Texas, actually has an office in New York. They were selling thin client terminals and servers. and the software to go with it based on the Linux terminal server project.
That's cool.
So they had a nice little sweet thing. And what was really neat about the company is you could see that the software and everything that they were using is basically stuff that you can get for free, but they had added some enhancements. Their management software was Webmin, but they added their own tweaks to it, and they're going to be making their software distribution available for sale. I don't know about whether it's going to be freely downloadable, but I think they have to if it's GPL-based. So they had a nice product, but it was good to see that a company, the big thing was, we actually support the products that we sell you, so not only do you get our products, but you get our tech support on top of it, and we'll help you set it up. And what they were looking at was they're an alternative to Citrix-based solutions. And believe me, significantly cheaper than Citrix-based solutions, too. Because basically you're looking at paying for the hardware. And he's talking about a 30-lab station that he did in the school district, or they did. It's more than one guy. It's actually a company. And he was saying that basically they needed a server, cost about $8,000, 4 gigs of RAM. It was doing open office and other applications. And each terminal, client terminal, ran about $500, and that would be the workstation.
Oh, wow, that's good money. That's not bad.
And including the monitor. So you're looking at what? 30 times 500 is about, what?
$15,000.
$15,000. So look at $23,000
for a 30-station lab, that's pretty good.
With the server. Now, that's not including switching software and everything, hardware, which kind of assumes that you have that already in place.
Right. But you should if you're already running the lab, you know.
Right. So what you're thinking about, if you try to duplicate that with Citrix, now, granted, you could use terminals, and we could say roughly $30,000 or $23,000, same cost. But then you throw in the Citrix software and then the licenses and the Microsoft server license and the cost of the Microsoft server and client access license and terminal server licenses, you're looking at four times the cost.
Easy.
It's incredibly expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And for something that...
Easy and less functionality, too. So.
Yeah, and not as secure because, sure enough, when we had our server set up at work for Citrix, by the time the guy left, we had that thing up on the network. As soon as we logged in, we were getting pop-up messages from companies. It's like, what the heck? Why is this happening?
Port 135?
Yeah, port 135. It was left open. And I was surprised that our IU wasn't blocking that, but they were coming in. We wouldn't have that problem on a Linux terminal server.
That's right, man. Linux is the answer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wasn't there some county in Florida that did the thin client? That they replaced most of their Windows licenses with just a bunch of dumb terminals and...
I can't remember what county or town.
Or
I don't remember what it was. I think you're right. It was a county in Florida that switched all of their like county offices, switched them all over to Linux.
You just pretty much put KDE on a desktop, all loading off of a central server.
Right.
Pretty much said that nobody had any real problems with it, but I have to look it up because I don't remember exactly what town it was.
It was good stuff. There's like I mentioned on the last show, there are really a lot of like states and individual like municipalities in the states that are switching over to Linux to host and run their services and their desktops now, just because you know budgets are so tight anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And you just really get more bang for the buck. And they're having so many problems with Microsoft and their security issues right now also that it really doesn't pay to, like, use the other guy, you know?
Yeah.
So they're just going with that. Not to mention, like, all these other countries that are jumping on the bandwagon, and they're just, you know, there's a plethora of them that are going on, too. Germany, Spain and Morocco,
yeah.
And Germany and Brazil and Mexico. And the list just goes on and on and on. But it's exciting stuff, and it's nice to see, from a perspective of a long-time Linux user, it's really nice to see people starting to jump on the bandwagon and see what they've been missing. And, of course, that increases the use of Linux and the other open source projects, and which increases their likelihood to become updated, and better technology ensues, and it just keeps escalating and escalating. It's really nice.
It is, but we're still not there yet with being included in the naming.
Yes.
Because it was all, yesterday, all the conference talks were, hey, it works in Windows, it works in Mac, and that's great, but still want it to work in Linux. And one of the things that I'm still disappointed about is that there's still no QuickTime software or QuickTime plugin for Linux-based browsers.
However, Mac says that that the code is available, and they have a QuickTime plugin for OS X, which means, or for OS 10, which means it's probably just waiting for somebody to do it. So, Dan, that can be your project for next week.
Well, that's a good question, because if it is available and easy to do, I'm surprised someone hasn't done it yet. Now, mPlayer has a QuickTime plugin.
Yes.
And there's an mPlayer plugin
for
the browser.
And it does work sometimes.
But the thing is, in order to get it to work properly, you have to have a really beefy machine and a really fast connection to the Internet.
Right.
Otherwise, you have to do the caching, and then it starts to get really quirky, because I've done it, and mPlayer plays QuickTime files great. But it's not as easy as the QuickTime plugin for Windows or Mac.
Right.
And then you can go with the crossover plugin.
Well, you wouldn't expect it to be as good as for Mac, just because, Apple built the thing. But
there's QuickTime plugin. I mean, there's crossover plugin from CodeWeavers that'll run QuickTime great. And QuickTime will run out of wine great. But, in order to get the plugin to function anywhere near the way it does on Mac or Windows, you have to use the CodeWeavers crossover plugin, which is unfortunate. I like their product, but I'd still like a native QuickTime for Linux. Buy Apple. Damn Apple.
The city of Largo.
What?
The city of Florida. It's the city of Largo that did the thin client switch over and killed all their Microsoft stuff.
Wait.
800 users.
To answer, to reply to Mellophone on the chat server, yes, I realize that mPlayer plays QuickTime, and it plays it great because I have it on my laptop and on my workstation, but still, the plug-in issue, it doesn't work as great as it does on the Windows or Macintosh environment. I want a QuickTime plugin for Linux by Apple. Why not?
I do too. I want one, and this is going to sound really stupid and a selfish want. I want one, and the reason that I want one is because I really like checking out these. Apple has this cool part of their site where they have all the newest movie trailers out.
Uh-huh.
And they're always in QuickTime format, and I can never get the damn things to run. I really would like to play those. It pains me to have to find a Macintosh somewhere to run those on, because, God forbid I would go anywhere and try and run them off a Windows box. I probably would explode just typing on the computer at this point.
Well, what you can do, Link. You can open up the source code, source of the web page you're in.
I've done
pull
that
it
before.
Out of there.
Pull it out
type
of there.
Type it right into
mPlayer,
or download it and play it through mPlayer.
Yeah, but I've done that.
Don't try and stream it over the internet to mPlayer, like I said.
But it depends on what their source is, because sometimes they have everything hidden in there so good that you can't find the damn, where they're getting the actual movie file from.
It's a real treat and a half.
And that's just a pain, and I really would like to do that. And this is like the one reason I keep thinking to myself, I have this Mac at home, an older Mac, and I really should get the thing up and running and slap it on my desktop, and then I could use it for that and some other little projects that I have going on. But, it pains me because I really like doing stuff on my regular workstation in Linux.
I hear you, brother. I hear you, man. But all is not wasted because Linux
right
on
now
the
we
desktop.
Have to come over and watch QuickTime on your Mac.
Yeah. Linux on the desktop, it's really great, and we're going to roll right into that with Link spearheading Linux on the desktop. And is it ready for prime time? Link says it is. But before that, we're going to take a little break, our intermission, run a song called Penguin Planet.
Penguin Planet. I don't know who it's by, but this is one of those ARG files that that is included on the Nopix distro under the open music thingy on the Nopix distro. And there's 3 or 4 or 5 songs in it. I figure, you know, we haven't hit any of those yet, so why not play them for the general populace so they can see what they're missing on Nopix, which, by the way, is a fantastic CD-based Linux distribution that you can try if you have not tried Linux yet, or if you happen to be in the need for a really cool, like a rescue disk or something like that. That's the thing to get, Nopix.
All right, we'll be back in about 4 minutes. Enjoy Penguin Planet. Thank you. That was Penguin Planet by unknown artist off the Nopix disc. And we're back with Link spearheading the Linux desktop revolution.
Woohoo! Actually, you know, before I hog the rest of the show, which generally happens once I get talking, I actually wanted to hear the Xbox exploits from Alan, because I keep like cutting him out every time, and he never gets to say anything. So I really would like to hear how he's doing.
Now, my Xbox exploits, which aren't going very well at the moment, I got to thank Matthew for setting me up with save games on it. I sent him off a Xbox memory card because, unfortunately, I couldn't get any of my flash drives to be recognized, and he got me back the save games that I needed, and that part worked. It installed well. I can get a little minimal Linux shell up and running. I can I can SSH into the machine, which I had to do to get some of the hard drive codes off of it, just because you need them as a backup in case something goes wrong. So I got those codes off. That worked really well. Went and downloaded, I'm trying to remember the name of the version that I had, XDebian, or I think it's called. I'm looking at the Xbox webpage, which has tons and tons of good information. Unfortunately, I haven't read all of it yet, so it's probably I probably should sit down and actually just read and print some of this stuff out rather than try to remember it as I type along and get started on the Xbox at the same time. Downloaded that, burned the ISO. I can read the ISO on all my other machines. Xbox doesn't like it. Found out that the CD-ROM in the Xbox is one of these, I guess, low-rate ones or cut-rate ones, where it only likes to read their stuff, although some people are very lucky and it reads just about anything. My machine is not that lucky. So I went out and bought some more different brand of CDR, did the full erase, still nothing. Going to probably try one more brand, and then I'm going to start looking for somebody to hook up with who's already done it, and seeing if that, you know, see if I can borrow one of his discs or, you know, their discs and see if I have any better luck that way. So that's about where it stands
right
now.
Can't you just plug a different DVD-ROM drive into that thing?
Not unless you go out and buy one of the external biases, the hack biases that they sell.
Oh, that's
it. Pretty much it recognizes all the equipment that's in the Xbox, so you can't swap anything around without using a new BIOS. I understand, if I read correctly, if you buy the new BIOS, you can pretty much do anything you want inside of it. But
because I'm assuming that this DVD-ROM drive that's on the Xbox runs off a standard EIDE kind of thing, right?
That's what I assume. I haven't
standard
read up enough about that one.
Microsoft.
Yeah,
it's probably has something proprietary stuck in there. But
have you tried HP Media? Just came into my mind because Mellophone wrote it on the
Okay. No, I haven't tried that media yet.
What are you waiting for? Get out the staples now, man.
Yeah, man.
You know, I'm gonna have tons of CD rewritable to get rid of.
No, Walmart is. I don't know if they sell it there. 24 hours, man.
24 hours a day. Yeah.
Calling sick
for all your computing needs. Walmart.com.
But that's basically where it stands. I'm hoping to get the thing up and running because I'd love to use it in conjunction with the MP3 server that I put together. Because that way I'd be able, you know, because the Xbox is connected to my stereo already. So I'd just be able to, you know, flip over, fire up the browser in the Xbox, start streaming the audio, and I can flip the TV to whatever I want, turn it off, whatever I need.
That'd be cool, yeah.
I like that screensaver.
And actually hear what my MP3s actually sound like through, you know, through a decent set of speakers, as opposed to the tinny ones that I have in the back bedroom now where the computers all are.
If you put in that new BIOS, can you still upgrade the Xbox and or update it from Microsoft, or does that do something funky to the BIOS or
I think that's
prevent
pretty
you from
much
being able to do that.
If you upgrade
the BSA,
BIOS,
or does the BSA show up at your doorstep?
They can show up on my doorstep. Now, I think if you upgrade the BIOS, you've pretty much locked it out of being an Xbox, a gaming system anymore.
Oh.
It'll strictly become a desktop machine, which is not bad. I mean, you know, it's not that crappy of a machine to begin with. It's a 700 megahertz processor, I think.
That's not bad. You can get it for, what, $99 or something like that now?
Well, I bought mine used for $149.
Where the heck are you getting an Xbox for $99?
I thought they were on sale.
No, that's Nintendo's GameCube.
Oh, it's GameCube that's on sale. Ah.
But they have an NVIDIA
card. No, folks, I am not a gamer, as you can tell.
So, yeah, it's a 733 megahertz PC, an NVIDIA card, TV out's already there. Matthew,
so basically what you need, you need like a $15 BIOS chip, and then you can slap a secondary CD-ROM drive or a secondary DVD drive on there.
Secondary CD-ROM, you can drop a huge hard drive in it. The guy that set me up with the save games on it actually sent me a site of, he's got a drop-in, I guess it's a CD-ROM driven version that's a front-end for, I'm sorry, I'm losing my mind here. That video recorder for Linux.
Which video recorder?
I'm trying to remember that the distribution that has that. Oh, I can't remember. I'm sorry, but I'm totally unprepared, as you can probably can figure out. But anyways, it's basically it's a front end to that video recorder.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got it supposedly running on two different Xboxes, so he can stream from his video recorder out to any one of his TVs through the Xbox.
Now, that's cool.
So,
Myth TV.
Myth TV, that was it, yeah.
You know, maybe we should kick you out of here and have Mellophone come in.
Thank you, Mellophone. I knew it began with an M, I just couldn't remember Myth. Okay.
Question for you, Alan.
Sure.
Xbox can run Linux, but can an Xbox run Windows? I know Xbox, it already runs a base Windows operating system.
Yeah, I think it runs like CE to begin with.
But
can you
install Windows on it like you could?
Good question. I haven't really read up on that. I think it runs a stripped down version of like 2000 to begin with.
You just told me it runs a stripped down version.
Yes, CD is stripped down. No, but I think it's a 2000. If what I remember reading that somewhere, so I'm not entirely.
XP?
No, I think it's 2000. Hmm. I'm not entirely sure on that one. I'd have to Matthew is Mellophone. Thank you, Mellophone, Matthew. This is the gentleman that's set up my stuff set me up with the save games.
So. Cool. Cool.
So you're no longer Alan Xbox Metzler. It's Matthew Xbox.
He's the man.
Yeah, there we go.
No, but you've gotten Linux to work on like every other game console in the world too, right?
Well, those were pretty much easy. Those were easily done. You know, the PlayStation 1 was basically just buying the system. You know, you bought the system, you plugged in the hard drive, two thumb screws, secured it, fired it up, and it was ready to go. Now, I haven't done anything with that in a long time because I bought it when it first came out, and there wasn't a whole lot of... I mean, there's software out there for it.
Right.
But there pretty much was expecting people to write games and stuff for it, which is why PlayStation put it out there. Although I think there was a rumor floating around that the new PlayStation may have some Linux base behind it. Although I don't know what the truth is to that. The Dreamcast one was basically downloading a CD-ROM. The problem with that one is if you wanted to do anything with it, you had to download like an emulator to recompile everything on there, burn it to a CD-ROM, and then run it on the Dreamcast. And the other problem with that one also is in order to do anything useful on it, you needed the broadband card, the high speed card, the internet card for it. And there's probably 20 of those in the entire United States. And even if you do find them on eBay, they want like $200 for them. And it seems I only paid like $99 for the machine. I'm not going to buy a $200 add-on for it.
Right. Wow.
Wow. Quit procrastinating there, Link, and kick out the jams.
Yes, off the link to kick out.
Off the link to kick out. Well, being that I only have actually 4 minutes left.
You take all the time you want.
Everybody's happy. Everybody's listening anyway. Basically, yesterday, we had a Linux user group meeting, the Lehigh Valley Linux user group meeting, at Moravian College, and we were asked to do presentations on desktop Linux. And I won't go into it. I'm just going to touch on this. I won't go into like huge amount of detail because I'm sure that we could get my and Dan's presentations up on the link somewhere in the website so you can look at. But some interesting things that happened was I went around my office at work asking people, you know, what exactly they thought of when they thought of, like, desktop computers, what kind of software they would like to have. And, you know, they came up with normal things like things I would expect. Graphics or image manipulation programs, financial programs, spreadsheets, web browsing, word processing. These are all things that, you know, I popped right into my head first thing. But then they started coming up with some really odd stuff that it really hadn't occurred to me yet, like audio software and games and TV or DVD viewing. And a really odd one that I never occurred to me, which was CD burning. And I guess, you know, at this point in time, that's something that is a legitimate concern because a lot of people archive their programs and, you know, take work back and home, back and forth from home and to work with them on CD and all of that fun stuff. And I just had it struck me kind of odd because I never even really gave that much thought. But basically, in a nutshell, I mentioned that the first thing that we needed to talk about desktop Linux would be the look and feel of Linux, because you really want to have something that feels comfortable to you, that feels familiar to you. And the cool thing with Linux is there are like 100 different window managers that you can, you know, play with and customize to your needs and wants. And
three different ones running in this room alone.
Sure, we have a whole bunch of them running, just sitting right here. Two of the bigger ones that you're going to find with, you know, just about standing with every distribution, and these are the heavyweight ones, are GNOME and KDE, and they have all the familiar-looking things like icons on the screen, you clickable icons that launch programs, and little start button-type devices down on the bottom that you can follow around with applications and all kinds of stuff like that, you know. And then there are some that are more familiar to people in the Unix world, like TWM or XFCE, which looks a lot like CDE, if you're familiar with Linux at all or Unix at all. And that's one of the ones that I like to use all the time. So pretty much you can find, and the ones that, you know, the other ones, there are a lot of other ones there, and you can, like, most of these are highly customizable. You can customize them to look and feel like anything you like. They have ones out there that will work like the old Amiga desktop. They have ones that work like the old style Macintosh desktop, you know, OS 9 and below. They have ones out there that, you know, that do all kinds of different stuff. There's some pretty neat stuff, and there's just, you know, there's voluminous lists of these things on the internet that you can Google around for. And let's see, what else? The next thing I talked about. I talked about icon management and file browsers. Same thing there. The few big window managers that they have under Linux all come with the icon management that you would expect coming from a Windows background, which means you have icons that are clickable that launch programs. That launch programs that are not already running. I should quantify that a little bit. Most of the rest of them do not provide icons that have that purpose on the screen. And by that purpose, I mean, again, that there's an icon on the screen. When you click it, it launches the application. Most of the time, what you get are little icons on the side of the screen that are actually minimized
programs that are already running. And when you just, you know, when you click on them on the screen, it pops your already running program back so that it's maximized and you can check it out again. However, there are some icon managers like Rocks Filer and a few others that will allow you to do icons on the screen that are clickable to launch your applications. The other quick thing was file managers. File managers, there's a million of them for Linux. You can get them to do and look like whatever you want. Just Google around for the list. Or like I said, if you want to check out my list that I have, I'll make sure that we get somewhere. I'm going to make a link to my presentation. You can go through and check it out. And then I basically went through the different kinds of software that they were talking about. They leave it on the desktop. Audio software. Linux has mixers, volume control CD players. Players do MP3, OGG, WAVE files, AU files. Even stuff like Real Player audio and video is supported. CD burning. We have a lot of really cool GUI CD burners out there now. XCD Roast. And what's the new one that's out?
K3B.
K3B that everybody keeps talking about is the thing. Even though I haven't seen it yet, my preference is to stick with the console application CD burner, but that's just me. Email. Email's a big thing. Everybody wants to do it, and everybody wants to have the email program that they're comfortable with already. There are hundreds and hundreds of email programs available for Linux. You can find one, without a doubt, that runs like one that you're already using if you're not running Linux. Good couple of ones to check out would be Mozilla Mail and Silfeed. They are quite popular mail programs. Look a lot like Outlook. So if you're familiar with that, that's stuff to check out. Games on Linux. I really don't play a lot of games on Linux, so this is a category that I had to go look around for. And basically, I went Googling and typed in Linux games. Up popped a whole bunch of pages, and you would be amazed the stuff that you saw. Some kind of 3D pool games and Tetris and 3D space games and all kinds of nifty things. Again, just hit Google. You can find everything you're looking for and more, probably. Not to mention that there's still gaining commercial support for Linux gaming as well. You can check that out. And supposedly some of the stuff is pretty good. And you move on to graphics and image manipulation, and that, of course, brings us to the GIMP, which is the standard open-source toolkit for manipulating images. Really awesome piece of software, and Dan actually did a nice presentation on that last night as well, and I'm sure that we can probably get a link up to that somewhere, too, and you can check that presentation out.
No.
Good stuff. Yes.
I'm converting it to Microsoft PowerPoint.
Moving on, finances and checkbook. Another area where Linux excels, there's a lot of these in like professional grade applications that I never knew about because I was just happy with, I use one called Checkbook Tracker. And all it is, and that's all it is, it's just a checkbook tracker, but it works really nice. And I never had a problem, so I never really looked around on any of the other stuff. But there's programs like one's called GNU Cache, which does everything for you. I mean, it does your, it does a general ledger type of thing, and it does your, you know, takes care of all your finances and your categories, and prints checks for you, and does reports and all kinds of stuff. And there are many, many more things that deal with stock investments, and you name it, pretty much. The only thing that I have not seen yet in that category would be a tax program for Linux, but I do expect that soon. To be popping on the market. I can't imagine that with all the press that Linux is getting on the desktop now that there won't be something soon for that. So keep watch. Spreadsheets again.
I think, personally, I'd rather see them produce it web-based.
That would be a good idea.
Something, you know, that you don't have to buy the damn software. You just go out there.
Yep, that would be a good idea.
$20 to use their web-based software.
Sure, well, you know, if it's web-based software and you can get everybody could use it, then, you know, if you charge people a buck or something, you know what I mean? You make money hand over fist if you just charge them a dollar. But we have other things like spreadsheets. Get spreadsheet with every single Office package that Linux has available, and they all work really well. Some a lot better than others, like the ones that come with Open or StarOffice and the GNU Merrick spreadsheet. Really good stuff there.
That's a hellish compile, though.
What's that?
Did you say GNU Cache? No, you were talking about spreadsheets.
Spreadsheets.
I'm sorry.
Dan's sleeping over. Go, wake up, Dan. You have to shake him. Moving on to DV and DV viewing, Dan. There are several video format viewers available for TV and DV viewing as well. Most of them, Dan and I have tried trying to get our little personal video recorder kind of things running. But just for, you know, just for watching different video formats, two of the most popular are MPlayer and Zine, which can both handle the vast majority of your viewing needs and handle them well, I might add. And there are a few more out there as well. This is, again, something that something you're going to find Linux as opposed to a lot of other operating systems. Linux has a huge amount of choices available for its software. Not only can you find a lot of programs that run better than other programs or you know, different kinds of quality in the programs, but you all also have options of customization options, some of them that have a particular kind of feel that you might be used to or that you might really like, or a set of options that you might really like. And this is something that is very easy to find under Linux and things like FreeBSD and OpenBSD and NetBSD, because there are so many options available to you. And again, they don't cost you an arm and a leg. Pretty much you can just go out and grab the source files and compile them if you need to, or grab the binary distributions, and you're off. You can check them out, you know. That's the cool thing about this stuff. And then you get into web browsing. Web browsing, the same thing. Linux beats the pants off other operating systems because it has so many web browsers. A few of the favorites that run around the table here, Firebird, Netscape, Galleon, and Mozilla, and Opera as well. And a lot of these are multi-platform browsers, which means you can run it like Mozilla. I keep hearing Windows people tell me that Mozilla is one of their favorite browsers. Well, Mozilla runs on Mac, and it runs on Linux, and it runs on Windows, and it runs on a lot of different platforms. You know, Solaris it runs on, just about every, you know, Unix you can think of. And every, you know, other major OS, too, has some kind of port of Mozilla going on. But again, check it out. It's good stuff. And this is all stuff that's, you know, you can use it in different computing environments. It's the same thing everywhere you go. A lot like the word processing. Word processing under Linux, again, Linux has quite a few now major Office-type packages out. Like there's one under GNOME. They're making an Office package. There's KOffice under KDE. There's OpenOffice. There's StarOffice. There's SIAG Office Suite. There's two or three other Office Suites, too, that I just can't think of right now. And then you have other standalone applications, standalone word processing applications, things like AbbeyWord and even WordPerfect. And AbbeyWord and the OpenOffice and StarOffice word processors are very, very capable word processors, and you'll notice that they even do a fantastic job with the bloated Microsoft document. So definitely check them out. And they're also, like, if you look at the little task bars at the top and stuff like that, these are things that are, they're really familiar looking and feeling, and they've got all the usual kind of icons at the top that do the things like changing your font and thing. This is not a steep learning curve, I guess, is what I'm trying to get at, if you're familiar with a Microsoft operating system or a Macintosh. These things are pretty much self-evident when you get into them. So, in conclusion, I guess I would say, yeah, Linux is ready for the desktop. I use it myself every day at work and at home. I have my wife use it at home. She never has a problem with it, or very rarely does she ever have a problem with it. And you know, I don't see any reason to I don't see any reason not to switch, not to try it. It's good stuff.
And again, you can always run. Well, like I said, I forced my wife to run it.
Mm-hmm.
On it. That was pretty simple. I just took away the Windows box.
Yeah, well, that's what I did too. I forced my wife to run. There's nothing else there.
Showed her how to run Evolution to get email, because it runs nicely on my machine.
Sure.
So, you know, it's a little we've got a few too many things that I don't use, but it runs nicely. She uses it to surf, write a couple of letters, and browser email.
Exactly. My wife uses it for too, and she doesn't have any problems.
Took about 2 days, maybe, standing over going, this is how you do that, and that was it. She's not overly computer literate all the time anyway, so.
Well, my wife's pretty computer literate, but she likes to play that she doesn't know what she's doing a lot. Even though I know she does. But, it didn't take her long to get her using it either. Well, pretty much she had to if she wanted to check her email and things because I didn't run, you know. It was one of those deals where, like, I got sick of running Microsoft at home and that was it and there was no more. So, but, you know, after that she's been cool and happy and content with it. And I've even heard rumors about my sister-in-law now wanting me to install Linux on her computer when she gets her computer up and running, which is cool, too.
Mm-hmm.
And just because, you know, like, there's a family thing going on where my father-in-law's Windows computer keeps crashing, and it's becoming the joke of the United States at this point. And my sister-in-law
is dropping the Nopic CDs in everyone's computer.
My sister-in-law's like catching wind of this thing, and I guess she doesn't want to go the Windows way. She wants to actually have the computer run, occasionally when she wants to use it. So that's cool, and I'm happy to see that come along.
No, we should keep a tally of your dad and my dad, your father-in-law and my dad's computer problems, and see who has the most over a certain period of time. And see how long it keeps running before we get a call saying, something's not working right.
Longest Windows use tab.
Yeah. It was measured in minutes.
Unfortunately, I do have to have a Windows box up now. Because RCN is going to be coming out to fix my cable on Saturday.
So?
They don't support Linux, so.
Well, what do they have to do with your cable?
To let them make sure that it works before they leave.
Can't they bring their own equipment?
Can they never bring a web browser up or something? Just put a web browser, put up Netscape and make it full screen.
They'll
never know the difference, right? So, I don't know.
Speaking of Linux desktop stuff, I don't know if you caught the Linux show last night.
No, I did not.
But they have Marcel. Now I'm going to butcher his last name,
Francois
Gagné. I don't know how to pronounce that. He's a French name or whatever. He has written a second book called Moving to Linux, or Kiss the Blue Screen of Death Goodbye,
awesome.
Which is aimed at people moving from Windows into Linux, novices. It's supposed to be a really excellent book.
He's the one that has the column in...
Yeah, Cooking with Linux.
Yeah, that's a great column.
But what kind of floored me about this is it was published in... released in August, and is already on the fourth printing. I don't understand how it could go through the printing cycles that fast. But anyway, it's selling pretty well, and it looks like a wonderful book. And I think I know what I'm going to get my dad for Christmas this year.
Yeah, definitely. And I should do that as well. Even though my dad has my dad, like my actual dad, not my father-in-law, has actually installed SUSE on his machine at home as a dual boot. Now, I haven't actually been up there to verify this yet, but the hearsay around the family is he did install it, and he's got it working on his new. He's got broadband from, I can't even think of the name of the place now. But like something like Roadrunner or something like that out there. And so I'm excited to see it go. Not only does he have broadband, but he's got Wi-Fi running in the house and everything. It'd be cool.
Yeah. So we better start wrapping it up. We're already 15, 16 minutes past time.
Yeah, this is a long show.
And as always,
oh, wait,
grateful
the clue.
I was just about to get to that.
Okay.
I just want to thank everybody for listening. And yes, we're going to give the next clue.
Cool. score it in.
For everybody who's out there listening and excitedly waiting, this next clue is the portal to Linux and Linux happenings in the Lehigh Valley. Again, it's the portal to Linux and Linux happenings in the Lehigh Valley.
Now write that down, folks. You got to have that clue along with the first clue that we gave out last week and the clue that we will give next week in order to figure out how to email us the required information or the result of the clues to get your free Linux box.
Yeah. And Alan will be giving out the clue next week.
As soon as we figure out what it is.
Next
and
week,
hosting the show next week, too, will be Alan.
The Linux Link Alan Tech Show next week.
Do you have anything to say, Alan? Closing remarks?
No.
Alan
closing
says,
remarks for you,
dude.
Link?
Closing thanks remarks.
Thanks for listening. That's my only closing one.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for, you know, supporting the show. I know that a lot of you people out there are downloading the show every week after it's complete, and I keep watching the stats. My last set of stats, I believe, was 12 downloads. And this is just the archives I'm talking about, the stuff that I manage. 12 downloads of the archive for last week's show, and that gave us a total download of, I think, 145 or 147 times the archives have been downloaded for the tech show. In the seven, as of last week, the seven tech shows that we have done. So I'm kind of excited about, you know, the tech show, that something that we managed to rip off every week and have a lot of fun with. And it seems to be something that people are actually listening to, which is a bonus. So, you know.
All right. Thank you very much for listening. I was going to say something, but then I lost track because I was reading the chat line here.
You were reading and I was mumbling. Yeah.
You were mumbling and Alan was just staring off with a smile on his face. All right, we're going to leave you with the Linux Link Tech Show theme, Ruined by Me, like we do every week. We look forward to having you on next week. Remember to listen for the third clue. Win yourself a nice little workstation. Have a nice evening. Enjoy the rest of your week. And keep on computing.
Pulling up Link Tech Show.